Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with my good friend and fellow young adult author, Jennifer Hallmark. Jennifer Hallmark writes Southern fiction with a twist. Her website and newsletter focus on her books, love of the South, and favorite fiction. She creates stories with unforgettable characters. Her stories are a little eerie and otherworldly, but with a positive turn. Jessie's Hope, her first novel, was a Sela Award nominee for first novel. Her latest novel, Smoking Flax, released on January 16th, 2024. When she isn't babysitting, gardening, or exploring the beautiful state of Alabama, you can find her at her desk penning fiction or studying the craft of writing. She also loves reading and streaming fantasy, supernatural stories, and detective fiction from the Golden Age, or her favorite subject, time travel. Jennifer Hallmark, welcome to the show.
Hey, CJ, how are you doing?
Good. I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation. For those listening, Jennifer and I have been friends for a couple of years now. And because we're in the same writers group, which has been so much fun, it's a group that I personally have learned and grown just from hearing the feedback of my fellow friends and authors in that, Jennifer being one of them. And today we're going to be discussing her latest novel, Smoking Flax. And I'm very excited about this conversation because I had the privilege of getting an early look at this very fantastic story and endorsing it. And the book is just this immersive read with twists and turns and a distinctly Southern flair, which I loved so much because, as you can probably hear from my accent, I am not from the South. So I loved getting to be immersed in that world. So Jennifer, if you could, would you just share with our listeners a little bit about your story?
Yes. Smoking Flax, it kind of came about through writing a short story in another writer's group that I'm in. We do story prompts. And I wrote this just little short story about this 12-year-old child, Reed, coming-of-age story, who was in an abusive relationship with his father and who just wanted to get away and belong like any normal kid his age should be able to. It takes place in 1978 and 1984, so I guess you'd consider it a historical, even though it doesn't seem like that long ago should be a historical, but I think they consider it that.
Yes, and there are definitely some intriguing twists to your story as well, which is what I find so fascinating. How exactly would you define your book in terms of category? Where would you say it fits on the shelf? Because it's a little bit different. There is that historical flair, but with some of these speculative and intriguing twists to it as well.
Well, right now, the main genre it is in is young adult Christian science fiction. And it's actually today number two in that category.
Wow.
And it's also under young adult Christian social issues. I think I was number five today in that category. So it's been very exciting.
Yeah, it's a great story. And you mentioned that it came about through writing this short story, but do you think that was the main trigger, just the writing prompt, or was there something deeper that kind of inspired you to take Reed's story and fill out an entire story about him, an entire novel?
Yes, I really feel like I was working through some of my childhood angst in the story. I remember one of my friends told me that she felt like different parts of it that she read reminded her of me, because when I was 9 years old, we moved from Florida to Alabama. It was a very traumatic time in my life because my father had been sick for a couple years and had had to retire from work. So we moved up to where we'd be around family because they'd given him 6 months to live.
Wow.
And it was just I was just at that age where it was really almost too much to take in at that point. And I really feel like writing this story helped me to kind of work through some of those feelings and emotions that maybe I had never really gotten out of me. My dad actually lived longer than 6 months. He lived 22 years.
Wow.
He was in a wheelchair, paralyzed from the lower chest down during that time. But he was with us, and that was important to me, that he was able to be with us.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most powerful things with stories, specifically from the writer side of things, where sometimes I've found for myself, it's allowed me to process grief or emotion in ways that I wasn't fully able to do before I started writing the story. And it's almost as though I needed someone else to quote unquote be experiencing these things and these emotions so that I could work through them myself. And it's amazing how that can actually bring about some healing. And I feel like the Lord has used that in my life in different ways, just as I've written scenes in my stories that have been an emotionally difficult scene, but one that actually at the end of it was something that the Lord used to help bring some healing and comfort to me that I totally didn't expect when I went into writing.
Well, from the beginning, I've always said that writing is therapeutic to me. Mm. And when I started in 2006, I started taking writing classes. I had wrote just little things for a long time, but I decided to become serious. 2 months after I started writing, my mother-in-law passed away suddenly. And I remember I wrote it about a month later into a short story. And my husband had come home from work and I handed it to him. And he read it and got up and went outside and got in his truck and left. Well, I was like, okay, that's not quite the reaction I hoped to have.
Yeah.
But he actually drove to his sister's house and met her. When she met him at the door, he said, here, read this. And it was just, you know, kind of to me, confirmation that my writing could mean something to other people.
You do such a beautiful job in your writing of expressing deep emotions in a way that's relatable, that doesn't feel like you're just telling us how these characters feel, but we get to experience the depth of emotion with them. And you do that with young adult characters, which I think can be difficult at times with teens to express that emotion in a good way. You do it beautifully. And you did that with Smoking Flax, with Reed, because we experience his anger, his confusion, all these ups and downs of emotions that he's going through because of the life he's been exposed to and the difficult things he's faced and is currently facing. And we get lost in the emotion of his story and we get to feel it with him. So I really do see how your story could have impacted your husband and your sister-in-law in that powerful way, because you have the gift of being able to express emotion in that powerful, powerful way, which is one of the things I love about stories. It's the thing that keeps me in, is when I can relate to the character and experience that emotion with them. And I love your writing for that reason.
Well, thank you. My friend Amanda in our local writing group, she was looking around one day while we were at our monthly dinner meeting. And she said, well, Cammy always makes me laugh, one of the other members, but Jennifer, you always make me cry.
Oh,
and, you know, I hope I can do more than that. But at that point, I think I was really learning how to put that emotion to where it can touch people. I think back to when I was a teenager and I would read these classic, wonderful books and I would think, I want to write like that one day. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to move people the same way that these books move me. In a positive way, encouraging, you know, not to think life is easy, but that it can somehow can always come back. You can always have hope by the time you read or done reading anything that I've written.
Mm, yes. Which is, as any listener will know, one of my favorite themes to have in a story, the one I think is the most important, really, to have that hope at the very end, no matter how dark things get, that there can be that light that breaks through at the end of it. So I love that. I resonate with your passion for that as well. Would you say about your book, Smoking Flax, specifically, are there movies or books that you think are similar? I know we kind of discussed some of the categories that it's in right now, but I would love to hear other books or stories just so that our listeners can get a feel for what Smoking Flax is like.
Well, when I was working on it and getting close to the end, I was really thinking, what is this story? It kept coming that I was pulling a lot from my subconscious. And I thought, okay, what am I pulling from here? There's something, this is not new, because of course there's nothing new under the sun, but right. I've made it new with, you know, in different ways of movies. And the first one that came to me was Back to the Future, because there is kind of a time travel Southern time shifting, as I call it,
yes,
in the book. It reminded me of that. But then it reminded me even more. I had to go back and dig through my Disney movies of Disney's The Kid with Bruce Willis. I think it was maybe a 1999 movie. And when he meets his younger self. And even though my story is different, it has that same feel to it.
Wow, that is a throwback movie. I remember that from my childhood. But yes, I could definitely see the similarities there for sure between both of those. But I think The Kid is probably the strongest.
Yes.
Comp title or comp movie or whatever. But yes. Okay, perfect. Thank you. I like getting those ideas because it's helpful to just know where, as a reader, where the book kind of fits on our shelf of our mind of other books and movies and stories that we love. So thanks for that. Now, we kind of touched a little bit on the themes in your story, just in the sense of like where Reed is at and some of the struggles he's facing. But I would love to just hear from you what theme you think rises off the page now that the story is done, it's finished, it's published. What is one of the themes that you found to be woven into your story?
Well, I think the main thing would be belonging. Something that I think most teens at some point, and adults too, deal with, the sense of I need to belong, but how can I belong in the situation that I'm in? And then in the story, he moves to another state, and here he is all over again. Oh my goodness, here I am somewhere else again, and I couldn't even belong where I was at. How am I going to belong here? And it came out as a deeper theme, which was not in my original thoughts. But in Alabama in 1978, racism was still a major issue. It's hard to say because it wasn't just outwardly spoken. George Wallace had repented by then of what he had done in the past. And it seemed like things were better. And in some ways they were. But there was still an underlying current of racism. And it was definitely, people of different races were divided in segments, this community, that community, this school, that school. And it really brought out the thoughts that maybe I had never considered deeply during that time of why do I go to school and there's no Black kids or Hispanic kids or, you know, of any other races here? You know, well, I know there's people that live around.
Right.
And, you know, I was able to really dig into my past and think about how I felt about that and really the things I feel like I missed by not being in a multiracial setting to where I could learn from different cultures that I felt very kind of set apart in a not good way. And as I've, you know, gotten older and have been around more people and things, it's taken me a while to learn to integrate myself because of the past. And really the whole state has, we're getting much better now. But yeah, there's still issues even today. But in 78, there was a lot of issues. So the whole belonging and racism kind of all melded together into the story.
Yeah, and I thought you handled it beautifully, the way you touched on that topic, but also showed the impact on how it affects lives on different levels and different people. You know, Reed's best friend is a Black girl who then is experiencing this trauma in her own life and not feeling like she belongs because of all these other dark reasons because of racism, where Reed is because of his own pain and abuse in his history. But yet how that affects all of our lives, that lack of feeling like we belong. And when that sin of judging someone else because of the color of their skin or pushing them out into different segments of society, when that is such a part of our lives and our culture, it wreaks havoc in ways that we don't necessarily even register until later on every level, because racism not only hurts the person that someone's being a racist towards, but it hurts that person who is a racist, and it hurts their family and it hurts their community, because that's not how God created us. He created us to be together and learn from each other. And like you said, there's something powerful that comes when we can connect with people from other cultures and diverse backgrounds and all of these different life experiences, when we can connect with them and have them as a part of our lives and embrace them in community as God intended, then we get to have a richer, more beautiful and diverse life as a result. And when we don't have that, we're lacking something that we were created, I believe, to have. And it's one of the reasons I love that the Bible says that in heaven, there's going to be people from every tribe and every tongue and every nation, because that's the beauty of what God desires, is to create this mosaic of culture and people and races and pull it together to bring him glory. And when that's broken, there is that lack of a belonging, and it impacts us in a very deep and real way. So I love how you touched on that. And it's interesting how that theme just kind of poked its head in there unexpectedly for you.
It really did. When I was writing the story, I just start writing. I don't really think about race of people or almost not even male and female. I just have a character in my head. Mm-hmm. Well, Reed developed, and I had him meet Talitha, who at that point was called Karen. I ended up changing her name because I'm writing this story and I'm getting about chapter 5 or 6. And it was like God out of the blue just said, "You realize that she's African-American." And I was like, "No, really?" I thought, wow, that's going to change this whole story in 100 different ways.
Yeah.
Because this is 1978, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it changed it in a really powerful way, because I think if we think about it, there is an awareness that at that time, I mean, our country still struggles in different ways with racism, and it's a tragedy that that's still something that is impacting people's lives so negatively. But especially back at that time, like you said, there was still segregation, and, you know, there was still this division, and it was a little clearer, and there was a starkness to it at that point. So I love how God kind of was like, no, we're going to actually touch on this, and it's going to be part of this story, because that's a heavy topic to address in any way. And that must have come with a weight for you to want to express it in a way that was with respect, but also actually addressing it head on without compromising, you know, or acting like it wasn't as big of a deal as it is, and all that kind of thing. So I imagine there was a weight to it as you sat down and continued working on the story, as you realized all the ways it was going to impact you and the book.
Well, I actually went to a writing conference and had some interview times with Edwina Perkins, who is a sensitivity writer. Mm. And several different things. She liked it pretty well, but she pointed out some things that she's like, no, that a person of my color would not think quite like that.
Mm.
And showed me some different things. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I didn't. The biggest thing, which surprised me, but in, she said at that time period, because she's at that time period, because she's the same age that I am.
Oh, okay.
She said that in 1978, because I had one part where I'm like, Reed is talking to Talitha, and he's like, well, why don't we just call the law about this problem? And she's and Talitha's like, yeah, that'd be a good idea. And she said, no, you know, that would never have been a thought in Alabama in 1978, even.
Wow.
That anyone of, you know, my descent in a small town would go to the law for something. We would go to family and we would talk it over with the family. And I was like, wow, you know, I really was sheltered from a lot of things at that time. And so I'm hoping that the second book I'm working on is Talitha's story. So I'm going to have a sensitivity read of the whole novel before I'm done to make sure that it is sensitively done, you know, in that type of way.
Yeah. And you've kind of, you said sensitivity reader and sort of explained it as you went, but could you just give, for any listeners who don't know what a sensitivity reader is, could you just kind of define that a little deeper for us?
Well, mainly it's a person of a different culture that you talk to about their culture specifically, because a lot of things we have in our mind are actually stereotypes. And I had a friend that was of Filipino descent that was writing a story, but from the islands, and she lived in the United States. So she actually went to people on the islands themselves and found out that there was things, even though they were in the same culture, but because they lived in different areas, there was things she still didn't have quite right that she had to get lined up with, making sure that people could understand it, but it was the right thing in the culture.
Right. So rather than reinforcing dangerous stereotypes, the sensitivity reader comes in and helps the writer actually be able to craft things from different cultural viewpoints in a powerful way that demonstrates that culture in the way that it should be demonstrated. Right. So, yeah, I think that's such a great thing to have in our writing. So my books are different. They're military and they're, you know, have the dystopian twist and everything, but it wasn't the same as a sensitivity reader, probably because I had a Marine read it and I don't think he'd want to be called sensitivity necessarily. But that gave me the perspective of military that I would never have been able to have because I haven't served in the military in any branch. So that allows us to write in a deeper way that helps our readers then hopefully see characters in new light, see experiences as someone else would see them, and get open our eyes to how other people view the world in a different way. So I love that. I love that you are willing to bring your writing to other people in order to gain that perspective, because it does add a depth and richness to your stories. Because we have, I think, as a reader, you get that quote unquote baloney meter. You know when someone's just making something up, and you know when there's that weight of truth to it, and your stories have that weight of truth. So I love that and how seriously you've taken to writing these deeper themes and these issues.
Yes, I really want my stories to come across as honest and real as much as I possibly can. I feel like Jesse's Hope, my first novel, did that. But looking back at it now, I can think of ways I could have dug deeper into parts than I did. I still love that story, but I was able to take what I'd learned there and take it into Smoking Flax and just even go further into feelings and emotions than I have before. So it was a very fulfilling book to write.
Yes. And that's the hope, right? That every book we write will go deeper and further and be better than the one before it, right? You have that desire clearly, because I see you in our writers group learning and growing. And then it's not your only writers group you're in. So you're definitely one of those people who's always ready to learn and grow, which is one of the reasons I love hearing your thoughts on my stories too, because you give such insightful feedback, because you have that heart to learn and to continue to grow. And it comes through in your stories as well.
No, thank you.
Now, we mentioned a little bit earlier, you kind of made note that when you started writing, it was in 2006, but I would love to hear kind of what propelled you onto that path, into your writing journey. What really kicked you off and had you decide to sit down and start writing stories?
Well, I had been, I think after my father passed away when I was 28, it was suddenly. And it was really hard on me. And one thing, he had become a Christian during his time when he was in the wheelchair. And he studied and read the Bible and studied books and listened to cassette tapes back then. And I guess that was a way to feel closer to him. I really got deeper into studying the Bible and was really reading a lot of nonfiction Christian works and just growing and learning in my walk as a Christian. And I was writing these papers, I called them, but it was more thoughts on different scriptures and different things. And I had the church I was going to, I got a computer and I started a newsletter just to kind of help out at the church. And I enjoyed doing that. So when I heard of this class they were offering in 2006, it was just a little community education writing class. It was nothing fancy, but I thought, wow, $40 for 6 weeks. I could probably save up that much. And it wasn't really the money. It was really just me putting myself out there.
Yeah.
But I saved up the money and I went to the class. I walked in and I looked and there was 8 other women there. And I just wanted to die because I thought all these people know what they're doing. And I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And I sat in the back. And she started asking us, the lady that was teaching, what do you want to write? And people were saying stuff. And, you know, I had my nonfiction answer ready. And then when she asked me, I said, I want to write a allegorical medieval fantasy. And I was like, and really deep down, Lord of the Rings, that's what I wanted to write.
Right.
Okay. Chronicles of Narnia, something like that.
Sure.
But that was the first time I actually admitted it. And through that class, I was, you know, she said, well, why don't you just try writing that, you know? Because I was sure nonfiction was going to be the way I was going to go. And I found it so therapeutic, which that book might not ever see the light of day. But I enjoyed writing my allegorical medieval fantasy and worked out really a lot of my angst from my dad passing. I think that's really what that was for. Sure. And just kind of went from there to, I think in 2011, I went to my first writers' conference, and that's when everything changed. I met other writers more than I had already. I took classes. I started realizing I had a lot of problems with show versus tell and things like that. And just from there, I've just been learning all I can.
Mm. Oh, I love that. And I love that God used your first story to really help with the healing process for you with your dad. Definitely touches back to what we said earlier and what you mentioned, that writing is therapeutic for you, which I love that. So powerful. So when you're not crafting your stories and these beautiful sagas, shall we say, what do you like to do with your time?
Well, we live on a farm, a mini farm. So we garden and we have the flower beds and different things. I can vegetables and freeze things. We also we grow our own meat and stuff, and eggs and all that. So we're kind of farmers. I have 6 grandchildren from the ages of 7 to 16. Oh. So I'm always at ball games or different activities, it seems like birthday parties or something. I have a little half corgi rescue dog that is, we've had him about 3 months. And he came from, I think, a pretty abusive home. So we've been really working with him I'm hoping by spring I can have him in a better state of mind. He's getting there, but he's still real nervous. If he can come into the house because he's kind of an inside outside dog, but he'll come in. And one day I had a little suitcase sitting by the kitchen table and I thought he was going to have a heart attack, and he walked around it. And I got him to come up to it and sniff it like it was okay.
Right.
But he just was having a hard time not knowing what it was. So we're working on him. We like to travel, do day trips. We like to do some camping when we have time, and just outdoors, fun stuff.
That's great. I always think that I would love a garden, but I have the worst. I do not have a green thumb. I kill every plant that I have. All the plants in my house are now fake because it was just too depressing to me to see them wilt away. I either overwater or don't water enough. So gardening is something that I think is wonderful, and I love fresh produce from gardens and all of that. I love flowers. But I do not have the green thumb that is required to make that happen. So I think that's great that you are able to do that.
Well, my husband and I do it together. He probably has the greener thumb than I do, but he plants weeds and does all that, and then I put up. So,
oh, nice. Yes. Very nice. That's a good system. Tag team. Well, we are running out of time, unfortunately, for today, but could you share with listeners where they can find and connect with you and find your books and everything?
Okay, you can go to jenniferhallmark.com. And if you're on my contact page, it shows all the different Instagram and Facebook and Twitter or X and all the different places I'm at. You can find Smoking Flax and Jesse's Hope both on Amazon.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I will have links to those things so readers can find them right in the show notes so they can connect with you. But Jennifer Hallmark, thank you so much for being on Read Clean YA with CJ. I loved getting to chat with you today.
Thank you so much for letting me be on here. I really enjoyed myself.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Jennifer Hallmark. Jennifer is so sweet, and it was a joy for me to chat with her about her book and the deeper themes in the story. If you're ready to get lost in a rich Southern world, explore those deep themes, and discover some fantastic speculative twists, I think you'll love Jennifer's novel, Smoking Flax. I mentioned earlier in the interview that I had the privilege of endorsing this book, and I wanted to share my endorsement with you. A rich and immersive Southern world with relatable characters, incredible depth, and a great speculative twist, Smoking Flax brings readers on a life-changing journey. Hallmark explores poignant themes with grace and tact, weaving a tale that will stay with you long after the last page,
and leave you looking for glowing lights that just may have even deeper meanings. I loved reading this book, and I think you'll enjoy it too. But I do want to give a quick note to say that, as you can tell from the interview, this book addresses some difficult topics like abuse and racism. So for young or sensitive readers, it might be good to have a parent or trusted adult read the story first. Next time on Read Clean YA with CJ, I'll be talking with my very good friend, Corinne Norton, about her debut epic fantasy novel, Blood of the Stars. We had a great conversation, and if you're looking for an epic fantasy to dig into, you're going to love this episode and the book. So be sure to tune in. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult books too.